Bill Sprouse-Fletch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program. Here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Well, Boris Johnson is still alive, at last account, though he is spending a fourth day in intensive care trying to survive COVID-19. The British newspapers claim he is up and talking to doctors, but have not quoted a word he said, unusual indeed for Boris Johnson. As China crows that the pandemic is beaten in Wuhan, in Hubei province, warnings have been emerging. The Lancet, the British medical publication, says, quote, the first wave of COVID-19 outside of Hubei has abated because of aggressive non-pharmaceutical interventions. However, given the substantial risk of viral reintroduction, particularly from overseas importation, close monitoring is needed to inform strategies against a potential second wave to achieve an optimal balance between health and economic protection, end quote, which is a pretty mild statement on their part. China critic Jennifer Xing quoted that there is chat from Zhejiang Village in Hubei province, China, saying, urgent notice, restart the lockdown every village measure to contain the virus, leaving only one exit and entry spot open. Close all non-essential shops again, reinitiate group purchase mechanisms, and monitor temperatures. So that seems to fall into the prediction that experts have made, that you can't just lift the quarantine when so much of the population is still immunologically naive to the virus. So with that, I wanted to ask, how are you feeling? This is live radio. We're still doing live radio. We're doing it remotely. We're doing some of our radio via automation. It's all homegrown. It shows what people can do, because this is people's radio station. But I want to know what's happening with you. I want to get some feedback going here. Have you survived a coronavirus infection? Some of you have. And if so, would you describe it for us all? I know that some people have evidently had coronavirus infection and then have been unable to get a test and then had difficulty getting treatment and have been pretty much on their own. And this is something that is very much conditioned by your economic and, frankly, racial status in the United States. This is something that the pandemic has ripped the cover off. Call 503-231-8187. I want to know what's happening with you. Whether you've had the virus or not, I want to know what it's meaning for you. Have you been laid off? I have other questions for you. What do you think we should do post-Sanders? Don't you, you know, I was not, of course, surprised that Sanders did shut down after the massive effort to slander, smear, shut out anything to stop Sanders. Headed by the DNC and in collaboration with the major corporate news media. I have other questions. Don't you feel that the U.S. government has turned on you with the slow walking of the coronavirus testing? When Trump said that he would ignore the Constitution and the law by overseeing the distribution of trillions in emergency funds himself, how'd that make you feel? Do you feel that was the end of constitutional rule and democracy? And if not, what would pass that bar? These are intense times. And here we have a broadcast radio station. And there you are with your phone, and you can call in and tell us how you're feeling and what's happening. The number, 503-231-8187. I want to hear directly from you. There are scams you should know about. The Fort Worth Star-Telegram reports scammers are calling people hoping to find someone who has filed for unemployment so that they can pretend to be the unemployment department. Then they get your personal and bank information and or trick you into paying them an application fee. The pretend IRS scam is still going strong, too. The IRS is not going to call you. And I found first, okay, he's mine, and I'm sure he's going to send the $40 million any day now, so don't answer him. Number to call, 503-231-8187. What's happening with you? Call KBOO Radio and tell us. Here are last night's plague statistics, if you haven't already heard them. 14,768 deaths in the United States so far. 6,268 deaths in New York alone. 1,500 in New Jersey. nearly 1,000 in Michigan, nearly 500 in Washington State, 652 in Louisiana. Everywhere the disease hits, when it hits a black population, it hits at least twice as hard, stripping away any veil over how badly black people are treated in the USA. And that's from the New York Times, which has vastly quicker updates on these statistics than the U.S. government CDC. Why is that? The exception seems to be Oregon, if this report from the Portland Tribune is correct. Quote, a new state breakdown of confirmed Oregon COVID-19 cases indicates that Hispanic Oregonians are overrepresented, while African Americans are not. The first public presentation of state racial and ethnic data for the disease, the new weekly COVID-19 report, has been described by officials as filling in some of the gaps in state reporting that have drawn criticism in the past. The report shows that 18% of confirmed cases are Hispanic people, significantly over the statewide proportion of about 13%, in quotes. Why they can't use Latinx, I don't know. Of course, that's cases rather than deaths, which is problematic since testing is so difficult to get. That goes back to the Trump administration. Everyone everywhere is frustrated by being unable to get tests. In researching the pandemic, the phrase that keeps coming to my mind is the fog of war. So I'm trying to break through some of that fog with direct reports from you. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. And I am reporting deaths here rather than known cases, because it has become very blatantly obvious that testing has been federally sabotaged. The executive branch controls the CDC, and evidently some people in the executive branch don't give a damn if you live or die. We the people, my Aunt Fanny. There are 38 dead in Oregon. And Oregon is getting off pretty light so far, both the number of deaths and the curve that, you know, they're plotted out by X and Y axis. The curve is pretty low so far, so we're not getting that that gigantic increase, that exponential increase so far. Or if we do, it hasn't caught fire yet. This is the news you're not supposed to know. And sometimes that means really horrifying stuff. I felt bad about the prediction that Dr. Henry Nyman made on this show when I interviewed him in January and mid-February, essentially that this pandemic was going to hit us this hard. But this show is not for entertainment, nor for the weak of heart. So if you're feeling down right now and can't take some more bad news, I suggest you tune in to something else for a while. There are some excellent podcasts available on KBOO.fm, and you can search by topic. Also, we just introduced a new humor show. Fair warning, okay? You have about a minute, and then I'm going to talk about some stuff that's horrifying if you understand it. Right-wingers are still in deep denial, and it's going to hurt them badly. All snark and schadenfreude aside, if you have right-wing friends, neighbors, and relatives, this is the time to do your best, I think, to communicate with them and get them to slow the spread and to protect themselves and others. Fundamentalist religions are particularly difficult to deal with at this time and may feel that they are doubting God if they obey quarantine and mitigation measures. Right now on Twitter, scammers are going around to non-COVID-affected hospitals and making videos with clueless passersby in an attempt to pump the narrative that nothing is really happening. The phenomenon is exacerbated by the fact that conservatives are ill-equipped to understand this situation. For example, right now, a lot of rural areas are seem to be getting a pass on coronavirus deaths, and they're going to be telling themselves it's because God favors them, you know, for saving fetuses or whatnot, or that God is punishing the liberal urban coastal areas, or that the whole thing is really a hoax designed to undermine their hero, Trump. But a pandemic has no such protocols, and the disease will spread to all of those areas eventually. In fact, it's not going away because of quarantines. The whole idea was merely to slow the spread. It will and it must inevitably continue to propagate as long as a substantial portion of the population is immunologically naive to the virus. Notice that the Chinese made a big fanfare about reopening Wuhan, but they are still not allowing international flights from there. The sickness will return there as the factories and the roads reopen, and that will be apparent in a couple or a few weeks. And the only thing that will actually stop the pandemic is either an effective vaccine or a surfeit of people who have become immune to it one way or another. And that second option is the ugly one. So it was a foregone conclusion a couple of weeks ago that there would be no conclusion to the school season here in Oregon or anywhere else. if the quarantine is lifted here in Oregon, and it might be since we've had such success in reducing contact and there's such pressure from the federal government, it will only be a matter of time before it is reintroduced. We're in this for the long haul. Meanwhile, this quote, the federal government will end testing sites this Friday. In a few places, those sites will close as a result. The federal government seems determined that we shall not have testing. We will not be able to contact trace. We're not going to have that tool to confront this pandemic, this horror. By the way, if you're one of the lucky few in getting a stimulus check and not needing it to cover your debts, please consider a donation to KBOO, because we're here for you more than ever now. Still broadcasting, though we've had to improvise a switch to remote and automated programming, still doing live radio. Hello, this is live radio. It's 9:12 a.m. on Thursday morning. This is Press Watch on KBOO Portland. We're doing live radio. Would like to hear from you. 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. We're still providing essential non-corporate news you're not supposed to know.
Teresa, we have Harry on the line. Can I bring Harry in?
Let's talk to Harry.
Greetings, everyone. Thank you for taking my call. On Saturday, my aunt, Marion, who was in a nursing home, she was 98 years old, she died of the coronavirus.
Oh, I'm sorry, Harry.
Yeah, I know. And also, I have a brother who is stationed in the Navy in Japan, and he's under quarantine because his superior officer came down with it, and since they were all around him, they all have to be quarantined for 14 days.
Wow.
Yeah. About a week ago, I was listening to OPB or NPR, and they were interviewing people and some of the nurses at the urgent care clinics in New York City. And what was going on there was there were riots going on. People were bringing in people who were sick, and they were sending them home and saying there's nothing wrong, sending them home. And they were actually had riots. They were tearing up the lobby and cursing at the nurses. That they actually closed quite a few of these urgent care centers. And now today they mentioned that Cuomo mentioned that there's a lot of people dying at home. And why they're dying at home is because, A, they're not getting tested, B, they're not being seen, and so expect a New York City, you know, or there's a lot of people aren't being counted. They're not,
yes.
They die, they don't.
That is exactly what happened in Wuhan, and they may still be finding people who simply quietly died at home. I know that whole families were found that way. Officials went into apartments and houses and found everyone dead, you know, the whole family dead. And it's becoming much more clear to me that the Chinese lied hugely about the dead, because the amount of funeral urns distributed were something like 10 times the amount of dead that the Chinese reported. So they have really, I mean, the Chinese have done a lot of really good things and may have reduce the number of deaths around the world with their quarantine procedures, but they have lied. Certainly the top officials in China have lied about the extent of the pandemic. How has it been for you personally, though? That's why I want to know. Are you isolating at home?
Oh, yeah, I'm isolating at home, and I only go out once a week to shop, and because I'm disabled, I'm blind, this is okay for me. I'm used to this, but there's a lot of my friends are anxious because they have to stay at home, and not to be called a shut-in or anything, but, you know, I'm used to it, I'm doing okay. Example, my daughter, who lives in Port Angeles, wanted to come down to visit me this week, and I had to tell her, no, you can't, you have to stay put. You know, she wanted me to introduce me to her boyfriend. I think it's getting serious. So that's why she wanted to meet. But I had to tell her, nope, not because if you came down here, what are you going to show him? What are you going to do? Everything is closed, you know. And
good on
you. A lot of people were mentioning that downtown Portland, some of the area, they're actually boarding up the windows, and like a hurricane is coming, you know, and they're boarding up the windows because of they're afraid of people breaking in and or just vandalism, just breaking windows, and of course the taggers are going crazy also.
Well, thank you very much for that report, Harry, and I'm sorry about your aunt.
Oh, there's,
number to call.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The number to call, 503-231-8187. And this is the value of live radio. This historic event is hitting us now, and it's in this fraught time that we need to know, all of us need to know what all of us are feeling, I think. And so rather than have a guest this week, I really want to have you as a guest. I want you to call in, 503-231-8187, and the most valuable information from me is what you are experiencing and what it's been like for you, how it's affected you. There was a doctor on Twitter who put out a message saying, I received an email on Friday stating that a local hospital is expecting immediate shortages, and this is the information I was saying that is going to be a little harrowing, shortages of propofol, fentanyl, Versed, Presidex, and ketamine. There are several such messages. This statement is sufficiently common now to have generated a new hashtag, drug shortages. Statnews.com said, on top of the overwhelming shortages of medical equipment required to combat COVID-19, there are now signs that medicines needed for patients who are placed on ventilators are also in short supply. This is bad news. The medicines include more than a dozen sedatives, anesthetics, painkillers, and muscle relaxants, and the shortages raise the possibility that it could become more difficult for healthcare providers to place these patients on ventilators, end quote. In fact, patients pull out their intubations when these drugs are not used or if they run out. So when you go on a ventilator, you're first knocked out. That's because a tube has to be inserted down your trachea, and it's impossible for anyone to tolerate that. Your body will automatically, fiercely reject it. Unless you're thoroughly knocked out, and just a little morphine isn't going to do the job. So with every usage of a ventilator, there's a certain usage of the super sedative stockpile. An outdated, that is a week old article, lists them with a date they began to be in short supply. Well, I spoke too soon. It's been updated. This article is from QZ.com. Here's a list of some of the things that are in short supply with the date they began to be in short supply. Norepinephrine blood vessel constrictor to raise blood pressure, March 19th of this year. Fentanyl injection, a sedative and pain reliever, March 14th. Hydromorphone injection, sedative and pain reliever, March 6th. Rocuronium paralytic, I think that's Curar analog, to help insert breathing tube for the ventilator. That's been in short supply since the 4th of March. Vercuronium paralytic to help insert the breathing tube has been low since March 17th, and these things are getting worse and worse, and improvisation is starting to take place.
Teresa, we have several callers on the line. I have an anonymous teacher up first. Can I bring the anonymous teacher on?
Let's go with another 503-231-8187. Thank you, Mike, and hello, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm a teacher in Portland. I just want to comment that, you know, I work for a private school, and this has devastated the teachers of this community. The parents that we serve are able to work from home. We are not, unless we are physically with our students. So it's shocking to me, the social media I'm seeing from parents that say, you know, I don't know how to manage my own child. How do you people do this all day? Well, imagine there's 24 of them in a room, and, you know, anytime we have any one challenge, it just illuminates how teachers need to be paid more. We need a resurgence of union activity in this country. We need grocery workers. We need renters to go on strike. Billionaires can stay home and work from home and do their marketing campaigns, and it doesn't impact the real economy. But when teachers and nurses and grocery store workers can't pay their bills, can't pay their rent, I mean, people are already going hungry in Italy. this is a global disaster, and we have got to rise up as a people.
I hear that, and you're not the only person saying that. Were you cut off from your salary then?
It's uncertain at this point in time. My company is investigating the small business loan, but the details of that, you know, supposedly being a forgivable loan, I'm suspicious of the government when they say that. They bail, but we're not getting frontline resources where it's needed. So it's uncertain right now. And, you know, unemployment, it's impossible to get anybody on the phone or access the website. You know, we have millions. This is a tsunami of Americans that are miss one paycheck and can't pay their rent, can't live.
I think that you're onto the right solution, though. I mean, the only real solution is together and to demand a break and to demand income. We've earned it as Americans. I think it's affecting by far most of the population, and so there's this potential, I think, for us to organize. I managed to pay my mortgage. I have five other people living in a large house, and they pay into mortgage and bills, and they can't, I'm like a lot of people, they can't pay in, and so I've managed to cover it myself. I told them, you know, if you don't have it, you don't have it, and so don't worry about that. But that can't go on indefinitely, can it? So there needs to be a moratorium on mortgage payments and rent payments at the very least. And I would say that
now is also a time to essentially get reparations from these billionaires, these CEOs and corporations that are not paying taxes. I mean, this isn't even considering the climate crisis. We as the people have the right to determine what businesses operate in our communities. We could shut them down tomorrow and say, your business license is revoked. We are reclaiming, you know, the state. We have the right to reclaim things like people hoarding masks and trying to sell them for a 500%. Increase, that's essentially what capitalism is. So if we reclaim that money and say, nope, sorry, your assets are frozen, we're redistributing it. I mean, I know that sounds radical, but that's what's been happening in a slow-moving exploitation for decades, where the wealthy extract the labor of the working class. You know, when you've got people making 10, 100 times what minimum wage workers are making, it's just, you know, it's like, go to Lake Oswego, look at the mansions, the multi-million dollar mansions of people, the CEO of New Seasons, and yet those workers don't have paid health care benefits, they don't have sick time. It's atrocious.
Yeah, you don't even have to go that far. Just go up to the top of the hill that you can see where the transmitter is broadcasting KBOO right now, and you'll find that at certain times, the guards come out and block the public streets because they're so rich they can get away with it.
Right.
I think it's kind of really ripping the lid off of American society. We talk about $2 trillion being given out to the very rich, and that's not even all that's being given out. But there are $13 trillion just in offshore semi-legal tax dodges in the Antilles and other tax dodges in nearby islands. And so instead of demanding that money back, we arrange for a giveaway, which has to be paid eventually by U.S. taxpayers. It's pretty absurd. Hey, thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
I want to hear from you, and I want to hear what your situation is. I want to make it real right here on KBOO Radio. I want to use this community radio station for you to call in live and say what's happening to you, what you've experienced. I said before, if you've actually experienced COVID-19 and survived, I'd like to know what that was like for you. I know some people have. I've been hearing stories that people have not been able to get testing, not been able to get medical care. And when I say people, disproportionately black people are having this experience. And so this pandemic has made a lot of things more apparent, made a lot of things worse. And I've often commented on this program that half the people in the United States don't have enough to cover a crisis. Well, here's the crisis. And now so many of us are out of work. What are we going to do? I think the only real choice is to organize. But I'll go to the next caller. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I'll check with the engineer and see if we have someone waiting there. Well, I'm going to assume that we are still on the air. I was talking about the...
Hi, Teresa. I'm taking a lot of calls right now. We've got Don on the line, if you'd like to speak to Don.
Okay, yes, let's talk to Don.
Teresa, you there?
Yes.
Yeah, my name's Don. I live in Salem.
What?
If you call it just living, I guess.
What's it like for you, Don?
Well, I know all the homeless here because I was homeless when I first came to Oregon a little over 3 years ago. And I was amazed, being from California, I was amazed at the health system, and I was amazed how many Nazis just roam up and down the streets here with their Nazi flags and their Confederate flags flying in the back of their truck. And being in Southern California and being around people of color all my life, and then this happened, and Pumpkin Face is definitely the cause of it, and it's all a conspiracy. I mean, they just, you know, we've been doing it for over 100 years, making chemical weapons secretly, and I believe this is just to break down people of color, homeless, get rid of the black people. I mean, that's a cherry on top. I mean, even the scientists, I mean, this is like a Nazi screenplay or something. They got a little extra spice on the top. Wow, we killed 70% of them black. Yay. I mean, they probably have a party every day. I mean, high-fiving over there in the White House. I can't believe it's still called the White House. Anyway, they haven't talked about the Super Bowl connection. I mean, all those sailors that got sick after, because you know they were down there in the Super Bowl a party on February 2nd, and you knew the government already knew about the virus. So it's murder. They murdered us. I mean, for them, they'll kill 100, 200, 300 million people to get their way.
What are you personally experiencing? What's it been like for you with the...
I have a disabled daughter who lives a half a mile from Disneyland. She's never spoken a word in her life. She don't know what the fuck's going on.
Number call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. And I do want to talk to you, and I appreciate the person who just called. Was talking about Nazis out in East Portland being happy about the disproportionate effect against people of color. I was talking about the shortage that is worsening the situation as the peaks build and people go to the hospital trying to save their lives. There is a shortage of certain essential medicines that are needed for the ventilators. Of course, there's a shortage of ventilators nationwide as well. Excuse me, and a maldistribution. I'll get to the maldistribution in just a moment. U.S. for-profit hospital industry uses just-in-time delivery models and algorithms to avoid the expense of keeping warehouses, and the DEA has been on a campaign to sharply reduce the supply of fentanyl. So on top of the estimated nationwide shortage of 800,000 ventilators, it appears now that many ventilators will be unusable during the pandemic peak because the medications necessary to use them will be absent. Of course, even that means little to people who would never call the ambulance in the first place because they know that it would condemn them to a life of unpayable debt and or destroy what little life savings they might have, including their house equity. It's 9:30 a.m. Pacific time. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. And I'm inviting your calls. Number call 503-231-8187. Let's use this community radio station for what it was meant for. Let's find out what's happening in the community. I want to know what your experience of the pandemic has been. Are you anxious? Are you alone? Are you with a group that has to be super careful not to infect each other? Are you able to get groceries? Have you had the disease? What's it been like for you? 503-231-8187. Quoting the ASHP, it defines a shortage as a supply issue that affects how the pharmacy prepares or dispenses the drug product or influences patient care when prescribers misuse an alternative agent. And this is different from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration's definition of a shortage, which comes specifically from manufacturer reports. According to the FDA's record, there's currently a shortage of fentanyl morphine injections, but other drugs are readily available. Ventilators are a healthcare provider's last resort to provide oxygen to a person's organs. Their lungs have to be truly failing, which is indicated by high levels of carbon dioxide in the blood, rapid breaths, and confusion. The ventilator's job is to take over the breathing process by pushing air, usually with a higher concentration of oxygen that is present in ambient air, into the lungs and allowing carbon dioxide to escape. Hopefully, the person's lungs can use the time off duty to heal and get back to business in a few days to a week. It's a life-saving machine, but horribly unpleasant. In order to put a person on a ventilator, clinicians have to temporarily paralyze the person in order to put a tube down their throat into the trachea. And people who are fully awake just have a natural urge to fight off the insertion of an intubating tube. So being paralyzed makes the process easier for the doctors. After the doctor, a tiny cuff inflates, putting out just enough pressure to block off the space around the tube so that no additional air can get in or out. The ventilator can then fully take over breathing, pushing oxygen into the lungs at a specific pressure and allowing the carbon dioxide to come out. But because breathing is a natural instinct, people may try to fight the machine, which makes it less effective, or they may panic if they wake up and feel the tube down their throat, which is painful. For these reasons, anesthesiologists can give people on ventilators a consistent dose of sedatives to keep them comfortable. So I'm saying all that just to explain why these medications are so essential. While these drugs are necessary to keep someone on a ventilator, hospitals can get around them in case of shortages. Pharmacists can help healthcare teams come up with suitable workarounds. This is a quote from QZ.com. Fentanyl and hydromorphone are opioids, which all work the same way in the body to alleviate pain. Hospital pharmacists can choose to switch out these drugs for another kind of opiate drug, like morphine or codeine. The trouble is these substitutes aren't always ideal. The replacement drugs may be more expensive, a cost that either the hospital, insurance company, patient, or a combination of the three could incur, and they may not be suitable for all patients. Morphine, for example, exits the body by going through the kidneys, so if a person has kidney failure, morphine wouldn't be suitable for them. Morphine and codeine can also cause allergic reactions in some people where other types of opioids don't. So there's a shortage of propofol and a shortage of fentanyl, and it's causing a problem. On top of this, we have the Trump administration, which is engaged in simply maldistributing supplies on a political basis. There's an article in Los Angeles Times about this. LA Times writes, as the Trump administration's depleted the national stockpile of medical supplies over the last month to fight the coronavirus, it sent hundreds of thousands of masks, respirators, and other protective equipment to states with very small outbreaks. That's according to new records. That left medical workers in areas hit hardest by the pandemic, including New York, New Jersey, Michigan, and Washington, hustling to find the supplies they needed with relatively little aid from the stockpile. Yet Hawaii, Montana, and Nebraska, which each have had fewer than 500 recorded cases, each received more than 79,000 of the critically needed N95 masks. Now I'm going to depart from that Los Angeles Times text for a moment and talk about the greater picture, which is the Trump administration, true to form, is favoring red states. It's delivering needed supplies politically and thereby increasing the death toll in blue states. This is warfare coming from the Trump administration against you right now. Returning to the article, the distribution of scarce medical equipment has emerged as a key point of controversy in the administration's response, as states have been left to scramble on their own to get what they need. The Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Department of Health and Human Services have refused to divulge details of what equipment was going to what states. Skipping ahead, New York State and New York City, where hospitals have been struggling to keep up with the crush of infected patients, also received 4,400 ventilators, more than half of those distributed. California received 170. Ventilators also went to some smaller states with very limited outbreaks, including Alaska and Oregon. Oregon received nearly as many devices, 140, as 150 that went to Louisiana. But Louisiana had 16,000 confirmed cases of COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, while Oregon had 1,200. Now, departing from that text again, this is the 140 ventilators that Oregon then diverted to New York, which was the right thing to do. This is exposing the corruption, the ceaseless, the bottomless corruption of the Trump administration. I am actually broadcasting from my couch in the side room. Doors closed to keep the dog and the kitty cat out so that I can do this. I'm going to check with the engineer now and see if everything's still broadcasting and see if we're still on the air and see if we have some callers.
We've been getting lots of calls. We even got one of those scams to the air room here that you were talking about earlier. So Right. Be on the lookout. We also had a call from Tina who wanted to make a comment that I'm going to pass along to you. Tina feels that we need to get back to work. Tina thinks that we need to look at what the virus really is and assess the actual risk because Tina feels that we are destroying our economy with the way we are responding to it. What do you think about that, Teresa?
Well, I think that, yes, it's destroying the capitalist economy, and that's going to have to be replaced by a socialist economy. And the reason I say that is because the consumer economy is built up on an imperial base, and the money that we have circulating for 40-50% of the population is heavily contingent on the circulation of everything from restaurants to clothing suppliers, retail, and all of that has been interrupted, and it won't build up immediately, especially the way the U.S. government has dealt with the problem so far. There are Europe that have kept their capitalism in place by looking after the employees, and they did it by saying to the corporations and to the small businesses, we will pay for your payroll. Just keep your business on hiatus. Do what you have to do or do nothing, whatever it takes, and we will pay your employees. Just keep your employees on the payroll. In the U.S., we did not do that. We said, well, we'll give a little bit, really very little, if you look at how much other countries are giving their workers. We'll give a little bit to the workers to sort of, you know, pacify them. We'll give huge amounts to the very rich to be distributed without much oversight or none at all. And to the restaurants, to everyone who is left the super rich, we will give very little or nothing at all and let you fail and be destroyed. And so this forces the people of the United States to hang together. We have to go to socialism because what we had has been destroyed by the lack of analysis, by the Friedman Chicago School of Foolishness and the assumptions that they made that things are just going to magically reconstitute themselves. They won't. They can't. We'll have to organize together and demand first a universal basic income, and secondly, that the big drivers of the U.S. economy, which come out of the fraudulence of capitalism, specifically I'm talking about the gambling economy of the stock market and of the derivatives market, that's going to have to go away. The huge profits made by corporations in the health denial business, we call them health insurance. That's going to have to go away. People, everyone who's on those payrolls is, you know, they're going to have a shock, and they're going to have to go on the universal basic income because we can't do things that way anymore, obviously. These institutions are collapsing and will continue to collapse. And whether we call it socialism or not, that's the repair path that is left to us, and even that won't happen. The very rich will hide in their bunkers. They actually do have bunkers, more or less, gated communities in any event. They will let us perish unless we force them through organization, frankly, through general strikes, like we had 100 years ago, to give up, to build an economy in which we have universal health care. We guarantee economic participation. We guarantee housing and human rights. How's that for a rant? The number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I think it's funny that simply because they're more clear-eyed about it, Denmark and Sweden are going to retain their capitalist base, whereas the capitalist base in the U.S., because we live in fantasy world in terms of how it works, our base has been destroyed, and we're going to have to move much further towards socialism than those social democratic countries will do. And here we had someone offering a very mild and very logical transition to social democracy, Bernie Sanders, who was hounded out of the political sphere just yesterday. Here we are. It's 9:43 a.m. Pacific time. Been wanting to talk to you. I want to know what your experience is. I want to know, have you experienced the virus? What was it like for you? Have you had to try to get medical care? I also want to know What's happening with you economically? Are you worried about making rent? Did you make rents? A lot of people didn't.
We have Julie on the line, Teresa.
Yes, let's go to Julie.
All right, here's Julie.
Hi, Julie. How is it for you?
Segueing beautifully. I wanted to know, what now that Bernie has stepped aside, but I saw pictures of them yesterday holding hands together, and what would be the best way that the Democratic Party could be as strong as possible and show that to the American people so that there's a good chance that they would win?
Well, okay. I'm going to answer that in two ways, because it kind of depends on how you define a win for the Democratic Party. Who is the Democratic Party? That's like asking who is the United States when it comes to, if you're asking from overseas, the United States is a group of powerful hegemons. It is a small group compared to larger population, rather small. And effectively speaking, it is less than 1% of the population, which is bolstered by a group of about 10% of the population, which gets sufficient funds to feel comfortable and to feel that they are participating in an egalitarian system. The other 90% can go to hell. And that is also true of the Democratic Party. And the Democratic Party, in terms of its power, the constitution of the people in power, people who pull the strings, who make things happen, as we have seen over the last several months, as they continuously attacked the most vibrant candidate, a win for the Democratic Party would be keeping the corporations in power, because corporations pay their bills. The corporations are who they hang with, it's who they ski with, it's who they turn to for contributions, so they can get on air and bamboozle the greater majority of the people into thinking that they represent them rather than the corporations. And they do this. The Democratic Party does this differently from the Republican Party, which is very similar. The Republican Party keeps a small core, uses gerrymandering and poll closures, etc., make sure that their small core of supporters, relatively small, is able to stay in power even though they are the minority. They do this by assuring them a sense of superiority, and as you can see by the distribution, for example, of needed COVID PPE supplies, by favoring them. This is kind of a new wrinkle. The Democratic Party operates by promoting feel-good tactics. For example, Democratic Party supports me as a male-to-female transgender person. They're careful to say that we're on the progressive end of things and that we care about Black, Indigenous, and people of color and incorporate them, but they also serve the corporations. So what's a win for the Democratic Party? If you mean a Democratic Party that could be, if you mean a Democratic Party that would actually respond to its constituents, then a win would be a gesture to the Bernie supporters, the one that was absolutely lacking in 2016, more than lacking, they burned the Bernie supporters. And that gesture would be perhaps putting Elizabeth Warren in as vice president for the candidate. I think that would produce wild support. But another way, it just depends on how you define the Democratic Party. They can win simply by running a lame campaign, standing as the better people. You know, we can stand on the pillar with our nose in the air and say, well, at least we are kind and generous to GLBTQ persons and to BIPOC persons, and we understand that all people should be equal, even though we're not really going to lift a finger against the corporate hegemons who keep things just as they are. So there's two ways to win. It depends on who grabs the power. And right now, I'd say corporate parties got the power, and something needs to change. But I will say also that this time in history is more conducive to change than anything I've ever seen in my life. So maybe there's some hope. Maybe there could be some difference. I am furious at the DNC myself. And I've said on Twitter, talking about this, just speaking for myself, I'll probably hold my nose. I guess there are I can't get too specific because of the nature of regulations on this radio, come to think of it, so I won't complete that thought. But I can say more obliquely that as someone who has also been subject to, well, rape, it doesn't feel good to vote for a rapist. And I sure would like to have a choice in which I didn't have to vote for any. Remember to call 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. And what I really want to talk about is how the pandemic is affecting you. What's it been like for you? Are you isolated by yourself and suffering, you know, the loneliness that you must inevitably feel from doing that? Are you isolating with a group of other people, and therefore do you have to have protocols on who goes out and when, and how you decontaminate yourself when you come back in, because this is a hugely contagious virus. Oregon has been very successful and probably lucky also so far in keeping the numbers down. New York, not so lucky. Louisiana, not so lucky. And of course, there could be a huge number of people in the pipeline. We just don't know. We don't have the testing, thanks to the Trump administration. If we did have a core group of people, if we do have a group of core people here in Oregon who could be identified, isolated, quarantined for a bit to save the rest of us, well, we'll never know because the testing has been absolutely sabotaged. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187.
We have a couple callers online. I think the next one up, Teresa, that we haven't lost is Marilyn.
Okay. Before we go to Marilyn, I want to say that if you are one of the lucky few who are getting a stimulus check and don't actually need it, please do consider KBOO. Media outlets generally are suffering. Some of the very ones that we have to depend on more than usual. I noticed that Willamette Week has gone to a contribution model like The Guardian in England. We need your money now. If you are one of the lucky few, kick down, won't you? Go to kbo.fm. Give us a chunk of that stimulus check. We need it because we're not able to do our spring pledge drive. But whatever we get right now is matched by someone who put up $20K. So we can do it if you can do it. And hi, we'll go to Marilyn.
Yeah, I've been a subscriber since 1990. I'm 74, and I'm by myself except my brother and sister-in-law fix me dinner sometimes on their deck, so I don't go inside their house.
Oh, sweet.
And I can pay my rent at least now. But when you talked about testing getting withdrawn and the supplies going to the red state. Can you give some could you give some substantiation of that? And two, it makes me very afraid.
Well, it is pretty frightening. Most of the information I have on this is coming from the Los Angeles Times reporters.
Okay, so I'm not very good on the computer, but I could look up the LA Times.
You could.
Find it.
Yeah. Okay. Let me scroll forward in my notes and see if I can find something more specific for that source. Let's see. Oh, I'm sorry. I think I just put Los Angeles Times on that. I don't have the exact URL. But you should be able to find it with the LA Times search engine.
Okay.
As bad as things are, at least you're not on a cruise ship. There's 6,000 passengers at sea still on cruise liners. They're just floating Petri dishes. That's another thing that's going on. But yeah, the Trump administration has been doing that sort of thing since they got into power. Trump has been about consolidating his own power by any means. He has continued to do this, evidently, according to the LA Times, with distribution of needed equipment. One of the things that is really frightening about that is the confiscations that they report from federal authorities who just come in to grab equipment without explanation or warning to be redistributed somewhere. They won't say where.
What kind of places do they confiscate them from?
I believe they're taking them from state stockpiles.
But Oregon is a blue state. Why would they send ventilators here?
Why did they send 140 ventilators here? I really don't know. I could see where they would send them to Wyoming or Nevada. They sent them where they were not needed. They may be trying to please
keep them away
from Oregon.
Keep them away from places that they don't want them to go, that they want it to suffer or something.
Yeah. The overall pattern seems to fit that modus operandi. And I don't know why they decided to send Oregon 140 ventilators. We had and still have 700. The 140 was diverted to New York. Maybe it was a sop to the, this is a blue state in the cities and a red state elsewhere, so.
Oh, yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thanks for calling. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Still got time for one more call in. I want to know what your experience has been, what it's been like for you to be in isolation, how you feel about your economic situation.
We have Roberta on the line, Teresa. I think it'll be the last call for the morning.
Okay. We'll go to you.
Roberta?
You're on air. Hi, Roberta.
Hi. First time. Okay. I am a terrestrial radio enthusiast. Just a second here. Okay. Terrestrial radio enthusiast. Am I coming in okay?
Yes,
and
you are.
In this time of global and a local emergency, why is it that I continue to flip through the AM radio dial? I like to have my radio outside while I'm gardening. Many of us are gardening. I don't want to harm my my digital equipment. I have a perfect little radio. Anyway, you guys, as far as I can tell, are doing by far the best job of recording true, honest, unified local news, and we need a unified message. And how can we do something to contact the people in charge of I'm blanking out here. Okay, the radio media and send the message that we need better coverage. That's it.
Well, it is, of course, possible to contact the FCC right now. They are in the thrall of the Trump administration, and I don't know how receptive they would be. You could call radio and television stations individually,
mm-hmm.
or you know what I'm going to say. You can contribute to KBO radio.
Yeah.
That's easy to do. You just pull us up at kboo.fm, and there's a donate button at the top, which
uh-huh.
brings you through the process. It's pretty easy to do.
Yeah. So far, all the AM stations I've flipped through, the sports stations are still broadcasting sports from how many months ago, right? Reporting sports. That's
right.
All I'm going to say.
Well, it's their bread and butter, so they got to, I guess, you know, unless they change format. I think that KBOO, our board of directors, is very aware of the fact that we have to change. Obviously we have changed in terms of how we're broadcasting things, but we also have to focus even more on our core mission and to be there for the people, to be that community radio and to be the community's radio. So we're trying hard to do that, and I imagine that you will see a few more changes. One of the changes that we made is that we added an afternoon news update because in these times we thought that although we offer that music programming that can be so important to people who are just need some radio while they're at home, people also want to know what the latest is, and they want to hear it outside of the filter of corporate news. And so we have added an afternoon update on weekdays, and there's been some talk about adding it in on weekends as well. And we're doing that with KBOO volunteers, experienced KBOO volunteers, including myself. I do the Tuesday, and today you'll hear Joe of Old Mole Joe and his daughter will do, if all the buttons work, will do the afternoon update this afternoon.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling in. Well, I think that's going to about wrap it up for KBOO Press Watch. I hope that you will stay tuned for more of the Radio Zine. We are going out to you 90.7 FM and via KBOO.FM, and in that manner to all the ships at sea.